Okay, so today what we're going to talk about is burial in Judaism, other forms of dealing with a dead body. And in order to start, I thought I'd just start with just a little anecdote. It's about an older woman, and she's hovering near death, so she calls in a rabbi, and she says, "I have two requests before I die. The first request, I want to be cremated." The rabbi said, "That's absolutely forbidden. You can't be cremated. It's the most disrespectful thing you can do to the body." The woman says, I don't care, rabbi. I want to be cremated." And they have this argument that goes back and forth and back and forth, and the rabbi sees that he's going nowhere, so he said, "Okay, tell me, what's your second request?" And she says, "I want my ashes scattered all over Bloomingdale's department store." The rabbi said, "Why in the world would you want that?" To which she responded, "That way, I'll know that my daughters will visit me at least twice a week." Right? You may have heard that before. And I know this is a serious topic, but in the Talmud, they started all serious discussions with some sort of levity. So I thought it would be appropriate to start that as well. Okay, so burial in the Torah. When we think about the style of the Torah, when we think about the biblical style, what we often find is that as minimal ink is spilled as possible on any given topic, even the most foundational ideas in the entire Torah. And then all of a sudden, and when that's not the case, when it seems like the Torah is just spilling so much ink on one topic, you have to ask the question, why is it doing it? It's obviously trying to highlight something. And burial, I believe, is one of those things. There is so much ink spilled on burial in the Torah, right? You go back to Genesis, you go back to Adam and Eve. And what does God tell Adam? "From earth you come, and from the earth to the earth you shall return," making it very clear that that burial is the way to go at, with a dead body. We have the story of Abraham and Sarah. Sarah, Abraham's wife, passes away, and the Torah could have told a very brief story. It could have just said Abraham brought a gravesite in Hebron, and buried Sarah there. But instead, we had this long, drawn-out conversation, all of the intricate negotiations that went on to buy that burial site in Hebron, as if to show how much effort Abraham was willing to go through to get a proper burial site for his wife. And the back and forth about what the funeral actually looked like, then the burial itself. And then you have Jacob. You have the third patriarch. And what happens with him? He makes Yosef, his son, promise that he will be buried in the land of Israel whenever the Israelites come out of Egypt, that he'll be buried in the land of Israel. I'm sorry, even before that, he'll be buried in the land of Israel together with his family. And it's one burial after another. And then you get to the book of Joshua, when the Jewish people start to inherit the land of Israel. And there are some battles as they settle the land. And one of those battles is against the city called Ai. And it describes how the city of Ai put up a fight against the Israelites. And eventually, the king of the city of Ai is killed. And Joshua takes it upon himself to ensure that the king of Ai is given a proper and respectful burial. This was the person that warred against Joshua and his army, and yet he took it upon himself to ensure that the king of Ai would have a proper burial. The Talmud tells us that in the story of the spies, right? And this is all based on the verses on the story of the spies, when the Jewish people send spies to look out, to scout out the land of Israel and to come back with a report, and they end up coming back with that devastating report that has future consequences, almost eternal consequences. And two of those scouts come back and try to speak positively about the land of Israel. One of those spies, his name is Kalev. And what does the verses tell us about Kalev? That as he was in the land of Israel, he saw that all of the other scouts, besides for Joshua, were planning on coming back with a very negative story. And he knew that he would need strength to be able to stand up to the spies. So what did he do? He went to the city of Hebron. He went to Hebron, where Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah and Jacob and Leah were there all buried. And he went to pray at their gravesite in order to find the strength that he would need to be able to stand up to the conspiring nature of the rest of the scouts. So again, it was about going to this gravesite, going to this burial site. We know that traditionally we visit the gravesides of our loved ones, and our tradition encourages that, and gravesides of the righteous, and our tradition encourages that. Of course, the biggest gathering of Jews on an annual basis, this year it ended up in a devastating tragedy, but of course it's in Meron at the graveside of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Every Lag BaOmer, 500,000 Jews, if not more, come and gather there to be at the burial site of this righteous man. And then we think about Birkat HaMazon. We think about our grace after meals. Every time a Jew eats bread, we say this long prayer after we eat, Birkat HaMazon, or benching, the grace after meals. And there was it used to be that it was just a three blessing prayer. But in around the year 130, the Common Era, a fourth blessing was added. And it made it into a much longer prayer. But why was this fourth blessing added? So I've shared this before, but the reason the fourth blessing was added is because at that point in time, around the year 130, 60 years after the destruction of the Second Temple in Jerusalem, the Bar Kokhba revolt began. Right? Some people call it the Second Judean War, the Bar Kokhba revolt. Bar Kokhba was a Jewish man, a warrior, a great scholar, who some actually thought was the Mashiach, was the Messiah. He began a revolt against the Romans. And for 3 years, it was the most successful revolt the Jews had had. And so many thought that this was the coming of the Messiah. It was an extremely exhilarating time for the Jewish people. But then the Romans sent in more and more legions and eventually completely decimated Bar Kokhba and the Jews of Judea. The last stand was actually in a city called Beitar. It was a massive Jewish population, and the entire city was destroyed by the Romans. And for at least 1 year, the Romans did not allow the Jews to go in and bury their tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dead, their dead loved ones and friends. And then a new emperor took over and gave permission to the Jews of the time to go into the city of Beitar and provide a burial. And what did they find? Miraculously, they found that the bodies had not decomposed, and they were able to give a proper Jewish burial to each and every one of the victims. And it was because of that miracle, because of that great kindness of God's, that hundreds of thousands of Jews were given the opportunity to be buried in a Jewish burial, that out of gratitude, the fourth blessing of Birkat HaMazon, the fourth blessing of the grace after meals, was written and has become a part of our prayer service every single day in perpetuity for all of eternity. All because many Jews were given the opportunity to be buried in a Jewish burial. Interestingly, there were times throughout history when the Jews were the only ones amongst all of these different societies that would bury their dead. Most others would cremate, some would send them off into the water. The Jews were the only ones that would bury their dead. And in fact, you have the first century Roman historian, Tacitus, who in fact made that very clear. He spoke about how the Jews would bury their dead with dignity while all of those around them would burn them into ashes. That's how he describes it. And in understanding the great importance of burial, to this day we talk about it in the modern state of Israel. The Israeli army is actually known to take risks venturing behind enemy lines to bring back the bodies of Israeli soldiers in order to give them a proper burial. In fact, right now, I was actually just reading that, in the north, Every week there are protests to ensure the return of the bodies of two particular Israeli soldiers. And I was actually reading how the coalition whip, this young, inexperienced MK, member of Knesset, who is proving herself beyond what anyone expected, she takes time out of her nonstop schedule to go and take part and be with the families of these two soldiers every single week, even though it's a far ride to get there, understanding the importance and how significant it is to a Jewish family to make sure that their loved ones receive a proper Jewish burial. I want to share with you an incredible, wild psak halacha. The word psak halacha means a halachic decision. I want to read with you, I want to share with you a halachic decision that I heard about, that I read about recently, actually. It was a story or an episode that came to the desk of a very well-known, a leading halachic authority in Israel. His name is Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. And basically, the story went as follows. And I'm telling you the story just so we understand the significance of burial in Judaism. It brings us to the time of the Holocaust, actually. It's a modern-day story, but we have to set the context by going back to the Holocaust. And there was a man, a father, and his wife, and one son. And the Nazis were rounding up the Jews of that particular city. And somehow, the father and the son were able to escape that one roundup. The mother was herded off to the concentration camp. And they were able to find refuge in the home of a single German woman who was willing to hide this father and son. In order to hide them as best as possible, in order to camouflage them as best as possible, this German woman got officially married to this man. You know, at that point in time, it was a sham marriage. It was an official marriage, but it was a sham marriage. It's not like they wanted to get married. They were doing it in order to best camouflage and make it seem like they were, you know, just a happy German family. The war was over. This father and son survived. And this father, this man, and the woman that had housed them fell in love. And they actually got married. So now you have a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman who fell in love and they got married. And they had another son and they had a son. So now there's a father and a mother, a son and the first son from the previous marriage and then this new son. And they emigrate to America. And the son that is Jewish from a Jewish mother and a Jewish father, he actually, by the time he's very young, by the time he's bar mitzvah aged, he starts to feel this very strong draw to Judaism, even though there's no Judaism in his house. And eventually, he makes his way to a Jewish school. Eventually, he makes his way to Israel, learns in yeshiva there, actually becomes a successful scholar and then a rabbi. He has a big family, and he lives in the ultra-Orthodox area of Bnei Brak. That's the story so far. And he doesn't really speak much to his father, to his stepmom, to his stepbrother. And one day he gets a call. And it's his stepbrother. And his stepbrother says that his mother passed away several years ago, but that their father just passed away. And that their father left $50 million. And of course, being that he's a son, he gets $25 million. And obviously that comes as crazy news to him. He's a scholar in Bnei Brak. Very few people could use money more than a scholar in Bnei Brak. And it was the news just blew him away. So much so that he hung up the phone and then it hit him. I completely forgot to ask the question. What are we going to do about the burial? And he immediately calls back his stepbrother and he says, I'm going to call the Chevra Kedisha. I'm going to call the Jewish Burial Society. They'll take care of the burial. They'll be buried in a Jewish cemetery. All will be good. The stepbrother says, no, not a chance. I'm not Jewish. My mom's not Jewish. My father, he's really not Jewish, right? Maybe he was born as a Jew, but he gave all that up a long time ago. He's going to be buried in the Catholic cemetery together with my mom, and that's where I'm going to be buried one day as well. And the brother says, no, he's a Jew. He's Jewish. My father's Jewish. He may not have been into it for a long time, but he's Jewish. He needs to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Stepbrother says, not a chance. The brother, the one back in Israel, says, listen, I'll give you $50,000 of my new inheritance. Just please make sure that he is buried in a Jewish cemetery. Please allow that to happen. And the stepbrother says, absolutely not. And the brother back in Israel says, but wait a minute. What will it take? I'll pay anything you want. What will it take for you to allow our father to be buried in a Jewish cemetery? And he says, I want your entire inheritance. I want $25 million. The brother doesn't know what to do. What do I do? $25 million? Can you imagine what I can support with that? Can you imagine the number of yeshivas I can build with $25 million? On the other hand, it would mean that my father wouldn't have a Jewish burial in a Jewish cemetery. So they first bring it to court. They go to a court. And what the court says is the judge decides to cremate the body and then split the ashes. And then each brother can bury those ashes, the half of the ashes, wherever they want, right? The one brother can bury the ashes in a Catholic cemetery and the other one can bury it in a Jewish cemetery. Now, of course, that was not the answer that the Israeli brother wanted to hear, because there is, in Judaism, that's the worst you can do with the body. Far better to bury somebody in a non-Jewish cemetery than to bury somebody, than to cremate somebody. So he goes to his rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, and he says, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do there? And Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein says, listen, the Jewish law is very clear about it. Jewish law says that before anybody gets an inheritance, the estate has to be used to provide for a Jewish burial. And now your stepbrother is making that, your half-brother is making it, that this Jewish burial is going to cost $25 million. Well, that's exactly what you need to do. You need to spend, the estate needs to pay the $25 million in order to provide for a Jewish burial. And that's money you're going to have to say goodbye to. And that's exactly what he did, from what it sounds like. It could be they made up later on, but at that point in time, he gave up the $25 million. That's what his rabbi told him to, because a Jewish burial is worth far more than $25 million. That was the halachic decision of Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. So just like an interesting little tidbit to think about. As we talk about burial, some of you may be aware, especially those that have, know of some of my limitations. A Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with the dead. Now, what that means practically in the cemetery is that a Kohen, which is the literal translation is a priest, a certain part of the Jewish people, has to stay 6 feet away from the nearest monument, from the nearest gravestone, can't be under the same roof with walls as a dead body. But that's the rule. However, there are exceptions for a regular Kohen. For a regular Kohen, if it's a funeral of one of seven relatives, so a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a child, any of these, God forbid, then a Kohen is allowed to come in contact with those dead bodies. But a high priest, a Kohen Gadol, they're not allowed to come in contact with any dead bodies, even of a loved one, even of a first-degree relative. There's one exception. There's one exception to when a high priest is allowed to come in contact with a dead body. And that is in a case of, this is an important term to recall, it's in a case of a mate mitzvah. Mate is a dead body, mitzvah is a mitzvah. So a dead body that brings you the opportunity for a mitzvah. What is that scenario? It's a scenario where this person has nobody to take care of their burial. So if not for you that found this dead body, let's say in their home, maybe you're their next door neighbor, if not for you, they would have no one to take care of their burial. In that scenario, in order to make sure that every single person has a proper burial, a Kohen Gadol, a high priest, is allowed to come in contact with a dead body, bury the body himself, to ensure that Jewish burial. That is the significance of a Jewish burial. One of the most important laws when it comes to a Kohen is completely ignored, completely denied, in order to provide for a Jewish burial. And now we're going to start to talk a little bit more practically. Before we talk about reasons or anything like that, I want to talk a little bit more practically about the significance of a Jewish burial. The Jewish law tells us, and of course, I'm going to talk about how there's room to maneuver, there's room for flexibility, but in general, these are the general ideas of Jewish law when it comes to burial and the lack thereof. The repercussions of not giving a corpse, a loved one, a Jewish burial are actually quite enormous. The repercussions are quite enormous. Number one, cremated remains are not allowed to be interred in a Jewish cemetery. Furthermore, we're told that many of the traditional laws of mourning, so for instance, sitting Shiva, are not observed after the passing of an individual whose body was cremated. Now, I do want to point out, Kaddish should still be said. Some people will tell you otherwise, but Kaddish should still be said. And you should still give tzedakah and charity and memory and in honor of that person. But those particular rules, they fall to the wayside if somebody is cremated. Now, of course, there are exceptions to this. Some of the most basic exceptions, of course, are when it was not up to you if you were going to be cremated. So, you know, we talk about, of course, the Holocaust and many conscientious Jews. In fact, this is very interesting. I may have told you this before. You had the Jews that were in charge. I mean, it's almost hard to even talk about this, but you had the Jews that were in charge of making sure that the gas chambers were emptied and that the bodies of their fellow Jews would be put into the crematoria, right? That you had, you know, and Jews were in charge of that. And you hear sometimes the stories of these Jews that would take these dead bodies, put them in the crematoria. And the entire time that they'd be doing their work, they'd be saying Kaddish. They'd be saying Kaddish for every victim that they would lay their hands on. Kaddish over and over and over again. They were known as the Suder Commando. But what some also know is that these very Jews also were responsible for cleaning out the crematoria, and they would often try to dig these little holes and put at least some of the ashes into the ground, so at least the remains of these Jews would be able to get some sort of proper burial. So obviously, in that scenario, that would be an obvious exception to this case. In fact, I read, and I'll tell you more about this soon, but I read that someone one time asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Someone asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And we'll talk more about this one idea that somebody that's cremated, the one of the principles of Jewish faith is the idea of the Messiah coming, Mashiach coming, and then after that there will be what we refer to as Techiyat HaMeitim, which means the resurrection of the dead, and all of the dead will come back alive. And one of the things that's said is that somebody that cremates themselves willingly, knowingly, they will not be able to be a part of this resurrection of the dead. So their death is permanent. And, you know, someone had heard this and went to ask the Lubavitcher Rebbe about this. What does this mean for all the Holocaust survivors that were cremated? Now, of course, the simple answer, and a very simple answer, is that this was unwittingly and therefore will be completely, you know, that therefore is not something to take into account. But what the Lubavitcher Rebbe answered, and again, like to say these words and to think about these concepts is just gruesome. But that when you think about the sacrifices in the temple, right? You think about the sacrifices in the temple. The highest level, the holiest sacrifice, was known as the Ola, the elevation offering. And why was it referred to as the elevation offering? Because it was totally burned. Not one part of it would go to a human being. It would all be completely consumed by the Mizbeach, by the altar, and completely be elevated to God. And the Rebbe said that was the reality of the of those that perished in the Holocaust, those that were burned in the crematoria. They were your modern day Ola, your holiest of sacrifices. They were on a whole different level than any other Jews prior or any other Jews in the future. Just an interesting thing to bear in mind. So where were we? We were talking about the repercussions of not burying one's loved one and instead going with cremation. I also read recently about a hospital that, this is just a horrible story, mistakenly cremated a Jewish body. And the ashes were put into a coffin and given a proper Jewish burial, because of course that was unwittingly. And furthermore, if you're not somebody that's aware of just how negatively Judaism looks at cremating versus burial, then of course you're not going to be held responsible for that. And therefore, of course, you will, your loved one should engage in the many traditional laws of mourning, the Shiva for them. And of course, their remains can actually be interred in a Jewish cemetery. Just to speak of this a little bit further about the significance of burial and just how counter Judaism is to the idea of cremation. And what it looks like is that next week we'll talk about why is burial so significant. But in general, we require that the children of somebody that passes away have to go to great lengths to respect the person that passed away's wishes. In fact, there's a term in the Talmud for that. It's called a shechiv meira. Somebody that's dying, you have to, as long as it's realistic, you really have to fulfill their wishes. That's what the Talmud requires of us. But if a loved one requests to be cremated, or even actually buried in a manner that's not in accordance with Jewish law, you don't listen to that and you actually still give them a burial. And why would we do that? Why would we allow to completely disobey the requests of our parents? And the idea is that the belief that since the soul of their loved one has now arrived in this world of truth, right? And where does a soul go afterwards? You're in this direct communion with God. You're in the world of truth. And when you're in the world of truth, you obviously will see the value of a proper Jewish burial. And therefore, for you to go ahead and disobey your loved one is really to obey your loved one. Because give it a moment, or even right now that the soul is in the world of truth, we know what they really want. And what they really want is that Jewish burial and not to be cremated. Furthermore, if your father or your mother asks you to damage or hurt their body, you're not allowed to do so. And of course, it would be a similar idea with this. If your father or mother asks you to cremate them, you're not allowed to do so. So obviously, these are very complex laws and there are exceptions and there are nuances. But what I wanted to share at least is the general ideas that Jewish law tells us. And try to at least get that on the page, the significance of burial in Judaism. So now, I see that there's already a bunch of questions. One question that I'm not sure I understand, what about if cremation is medically necessary? What instance would you think that cremation is medically necessary? Are you talking about, for instance, a case where perhaps the body is carrying a certain type of disease and people, you're worried?
So.
Yeah, those are very good questions. The concept of a sealed crypt does respond to those questions, and that's certainly the way to go. What I will say is that nothing that we're talking about now stands in the way of pikuach nefesh. What's pikuach nefesh? Safeguarding the lives of those that are living. So, if, for instance, it's very clear that the only way to prevent against a certain disease spreading is to burn the body, and if not, that disease is going to spread and spread to others and shorten their lives or kill them, then of course nothing ever stands in the way, besides for three cardinal sins, nothing ever stands in the way of pikuach nefesh, saving a human life. So it would be that simple. Now, of course, you'd have to get into a scenario where in fact we are certain that this is the only way to prevent it. But I do know that those cases exist, and then of course the answer would be simple. Another interesting point, you know. So I did mention about the Nazis and the crematoria, and it's also interesting to point out. This is very interesting. It's only recently that Jews have started considering cremation. Right now, a lot of Jews do cremation, but it's only recently that this has been a thought. Now, perhaps it's only recently this has been a thought because there's a segment of Judaism, of the Jewish people, that aren't as concerned about tradition anymore. That could be, in many ways, those that are interested and concerned about tradition are actually a growing segment of the Jewish community. But I think the real reason is because for many years after the Holocaust, no one would ever think to cremate a body. That's what the Nazis did. That's what the Nazis did to our fellow Jews, to millions and millions of our fellow Jews. That was not something that ever crossed the Jews' mind. It's only more recently that as those memories fade and you're hearing about actually things that I don't think really have much basis in truth, but it's more environmentally friendly, maybe it's less cheap, maybe less expensive, whatever it may be, it's only nowadays that that this is even a consideration, and because of that. Now, I don't know the answer to this question that's asked on this chat privately. Did the Germans create crematoria because they knew just how horrible and torturous that would be for the Jews, because they knew of our aversion to cremation? I don't know if that was part of the thinking of the Nazis. If anyone here does know more about that, I'd be very interested to hear. But certainly that was it added another layer of the torture that that the Nazis brought on the Jewish people, for sure. No questions about that. So I'm seeing what time it is, and what we've really done so far is talk about the importance that, just given different sources where we see the significance of burial, talked about the significance of burial, given some anecdotes where we see the significance of burial versus any other form of dealing with a dead body. But what we really haven't spoke about, which is really what I want to get to, is the why. Number one, why do we care what we do with a dead body? It's just flesh and bones. It's nothing, right? Wouldn't you just think it's nothing? Why do we care what we do with it? Number one. And number two is, once we do care what we do with it, why is burial so important versus cremating? Why is that something we'd think about? Why is that something that just seems so significant that the Torah even mandates? So those are the two questions I think we'll talk more about next week. The reason I wanted to talk about burial this week, and now will be next week as well, and I'm going to send out a recording of this. I know that I'm seeing a bunch of people that obviously didn't see the... I tried to bold it. I'm sorry that today's class started at 7. Next week, I think, will be 7:15. I will send out the link. I made this into a podcast. I'll send out the link as soon as possible, so that way you'll be able to be caught up by next week's class. And the reason I wanted to talk about it this week is because this week's Torah portion is the where we know of the obligation, is where the mitzvah, the obligation to bury versus anything else is. And not just to bury, but to bury in a quick fashion, right? To not wait. Really not even to wait overnight. We have exceptions where you are allowed to wait overnight, especially in order so that there be more people at the funeral, particular loved ones at the funeral, but in general, we try not to wait. And all of that is actually in this week's Torah portion. So next week, when we talk about it, we'll be referencing this week's Torah portion, which is certainly something we've done before. Okay, so I have to start heading off to Mincha. Again, I apologize to those that came on late, and I'm seeing that more are coming on now. Thank you for being a part of learning tonight. I know it's the middle of the summer, and Shabbat Shalom. Good Shabbos.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much. Debbie? Debbie, do you have a question?
Thank you. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's a start. Thank you very much, Annette.
Night, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Debbie, I'm sorry, did you have a question or are you saying goodbye? You were saying goodbye. Okay, goodbye. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Good Shabbos, Shabbat everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
It's my pleasure. Shabbat Take care, Shalom. Everyone. Bye bye.
Thank you, Rabbi.
And Michelle, of course. Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye, Phyllis. Bye, Norman. Bye, Lily. Bye, Sonia. Shabbat Shalom. Good Shabbos.